Coming up on Avant Technology Insights with Ken Presti.
54% of consumers right now, when they call for customer service, they have higher expectations for service than they actually receive.
How does artificial intelligence factor into the world of hosted voice? Where will the capabilities stand tomorrow? And even more importantly, where do they stand today? Beyond that, how will all this impact qualifications and even scheduling for contact center agents? We've got a guy who really knows his way around this stuff, right after this. Welcome to Avant Technology Insights. I'm your host, Ken Presti, Research Vice President of Avant Research and Analytics. The link between solving business challenges and cutting-edge technologies has become tighter and more complex than ever before. In this podcast series from Avant Research and Analytics, we help enterprise decision makers sort through the business case, the value, the challenges, and ultimately the bottom line of technology adoption. So listen to us at your desktop, take us in the car, tune in from the commuter train, or download us at the gate. You'll find us on Apple, Spotify, and Google, as well as at www.goavant.net/podcast. My guest today is responsible for pipeline creation for direct and indirect sales channels. A serial entrepreneur, he previously built several companies from the ground up. He now designs strategies to spur growth and stay ahead of the competition. He's the Vice President of Revenue Generation at NICE inContact. I want to introduce Rusty Jensen. Rusty, thank you very much for joining us today. We've been talking on this podcast a lot about CCaaS and the various aspects of it. We've got UCaaS covered too, and security and a host of other things as well. One of the things I wanted to cover with you in terms of where we come to a starting point here is to ask if you could summarize how customer service has changed and how that in turn has impacted customer expectations of the companies with which they work.
Yeah, it's actually a really good question. So customer service has changed quite a bit because now customer expectations are higher than they've ever been. So, you know, if you kind of put it in this kind of context, about 54% of consumers right now, when they call for customer service, they have higher expectations for service than they actually receive. And what that's done is it's put a lot of pressure on vendors from a strategic standpoint. So most vendors that are working with customer experience, you know, 89% of them communicate to their customer service groups that we as a business are expected to compete mainly on customer service. And 59% of consumers today are picking brands based solely on the customer experience and the way that they like their vendor as opposed to just product differentiation. So brand loyalty, customer experiences, it's really higher and more important than it's ever been. And that's a shift that continues pretty aggressively.
So when you said early on that the customers expect a level of service that they're not typically getting, what is it that they're, do you have any idea of what they're looking for that they're not getting? Is it an increased, you know, initial familiarity with their case? Is it something else entirely? In what way are they not typically satisfied?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And really what it comes down to is, you know, it's some of the blocking and tackling. You know, they expect when they call a company that they're not going to have to wait on hold for a long time, yet they end up being on hold for a long time. They expect that when they get somebody on the phone, it's somebody that they can relate to, that has a warm greeting, that they can kind of gel with and have a good human connection with, and they don't get it. You know, they end up getting transferred around. They have to keep repeating themselves. You know, when they get an offer for a self-service application to make a payment, they expect it to be easy, and they can just go in and do it. And then if they've tried it and failed, they expect that when they get to an agent, the agent sees what has happened and they know who they are and they can actually greet them and they have their account information in front of them. And they don't have to just keep asking repeat questions. You know, these are the kinds of experiences that they expect. And what they end up getting is they end up getting systems that they're on hold for a long time. And they end up with people who keep asking the same questions that the IVR just asked them and asked them to do security verifications and all these long drawn out things where they can't get the problem solved. And then they feel at conflict with an agent. And so these are the types of things that they're getting when they expect a high level of customer experience and a good experience. A lot of times they're getting things that don't gel. And I think anyone who calls customer service centers can relate to that.
So when you look at artificial intelligence as an enabler of the solution to this kind of a challenge, what are some of the areas where AI can play a key role, can add value?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think where you first look is how do we maximize the dollars that are invested into a customer service center? And how can we get the highest level of people with the best training that we can retain and really invest there without breaking the bank? And so the first part of it comes in with good self-service applications. Not the frustrating IVR where you have to keep pressing button after button after button. It just doesn't seem to work. We're talking about self-service applications that can really engage a consumer and actually be a preferred method for them to engage. So the way that AI handles it is this way. So think of it first as a chatbot, okay? And I think this is probably a good opportunity to talk about the difference between AI and a normal operation, okay? Like a normal logical operation. Let's say I engage with a chatbot and I get online and it pops up and says, hey, I'm a chatbot. I want to interact with you. Now, a traditional chat system would have pre-programmed questions. You know, are you looking for this? Are you looking for that? And based on the answers that a person would give, it would recognize keywords as to what they say. But if there's a misspelling, if there is a different terminology somebody wants to use, if they don't specifically tell the chat system keyword by keyword what they want, it can't answer their questions. So it ends up being frustrating, actually. So what an AI system can do when you engage with a real chatbot is not only can it recognize words that are being typed, but it actually has the ability to interpret the meaning of what people are trying to ask for. Because it's not looking for keywords, it's looking to understand what is being requested. And then it looks for pattern recognition from all the different interactions that it's had and the different ways that people have asked questions, and it interprets it. And it's able to actually answer much more accurately and give them real answers and not just pre-programmed canned responses. So it creates this self-service engagement that is actually very effective and impressive.
To what extent is all this a reality in today's market as opposed to more of a vaporware aspiration, the kind of thing that we'd like to do, but the technology just hasn't caught up with it yet?
You know, that's interesting because there is a lot of vaporware around it. Because what it requires is it requires a lot of data. So AI is very real. So there are learning algorithms that exist through Google and IBM and where all these artificial intelligence systems exist. And they have the ability to recognize patterns. They have the ability to recognize mistakes and make corrections. And this AI engines are very real. But the brain that exists, which is what are the common questions and answers? What are the fundamental reporting elements? What is the database that this intelligence is tapping into? A lot of times it's just incomplete. So when people say, hey, we have AI, you know, you can probably tell by companies who can barely explain what it is or how it works. You know, they don't really have the fundamentals and the actual knowledge for the AI to draw on to actually functionally engage in a positive way. So is it real? Oh yeah, it's absolutely real and it can be done. But I would tell you, if I'm looking out in the market, I'd say the majority of it is kind of just vaporware and aspirational than it is actually real.
Right. And I can see how that would be. So we take AI and we get into specific aspects of what it delivers in terms of personalization, in terms of predictive behavioral routing. How does all that work from the standpoint of being able to build an opportunity around being able to understand the which customer should map to which agent and things along that line? You know, you and I had talked about this about a week ago, and that was one of those things that I walked around for about an hour after that conversation, just thinking, looking at all this in amazement that we're at a point in technology where the system itself should say, you need to talk to Fred and not Diane because you've got certain things in common. You've got certain behavioral patterns in common, and the system believes you'll be able to understand them better. Take me down that path.
Yeah, that's really a cutting edge thing that NICE has been developing. And as you said, it's predictive behavioral routing. And the way that it works is, you know, what are the trends in the contact center is people want better human connections and better personalization. You know, when they call someone, they expect them to kind of gel with them. They want to have that good interaction. And what predictive behavioral routing does is it takes from a pretty broad database of billions of interactions, literally. So calls, emails, chats, and it takes all the data with our analytics engine and it feeds the AI. And what the AI is able to do is it's able to look at patterns of personalities that people have through every call that they have. So it associates their phone number with all these customer service interactions and calls, and it actually classifies them in a personality type. So the algorithm will actually recognize the way they act and interact and put them into six different personality classifications, which are organizer, connector, advisor, original, a doer, and a dreamer. And they have different attributes on how they fit. And what it's able to do is to actually take someone who calls in and is interacting and identify them when it has data. And every time it takes a call, it knows more. And it can recognize the type of personality they have. And then it looks at the agent base, the contact center agents that are available, and it associates them one-to-one with someone who is the best at interacting with that personality type. So if somebody is logical and matter-of-fact, it puts somebody in there who gets very logical and matter-of-fact and doesn't waste time. If someone's more of a talker and they love to kind of engage and they go on tangents, they put them with a more of a playful agent that can do the same thing. And it really changes the experience that people have. They just connect better on a human level. And it's the AI that's facilitating that interaction.
What about the crabby guy who bought something that's not working the way he thinks it should? And he's a little bit unhappy that he's on the phone with you guys in the first place. I mean, how does the predictive behavioral routing route that kind of a thing?
A lot of people who are in that kind of situation, they want results. They want answers. Mm. They want it done quickly and efficiently. And so a lot of times we'll connect people in those situations to people that are organizers. And a lot of times in the IVR, we'll actually have them explain their issue. So tell us what you're calling about. And it can analyze it and determine very quickly their mood and sentiment. So not only do we connect personalities, we also try to connect mood and personality. So you get them to an organizer, someone who's fast, efficient, effective, who's very logical. Matter of fact, that does better for someone with high frustration level. So it can actually make those adjustments in real time to get the right personalities on to solve those problems.
How can the machine establish mood? I mean, if I'm in a situation where I'm going through this stuff and, you know, and you got somebody who's over there saying representative, and they're being very terse about it. Does that factor into the equation? And how do you handle cultural differences where some languages and speech patterns may sound like they're always angry?
Yeah. And that's the thing that's interesting is it's not something that you can just logically program. Like you can't really line command program when this happens, do that, when this happens, do that. The AI actually has to recognize specific pattern sets. So like cultural accents and the way that people say things and words they use actually get bucketed into different types of cultures, okay? And the speech analytics engine has to have really good data to feed it. So it has to have the ability, it has to have senses. So if you think about AI as kind of like our own intelligence, it has to have a sense. You know, you can detect, you know, how I'm feeling or my emotions, not by what I say, but it's how I say it, right? You know, if I tell you I like your shirt, I can say, Ken, I really love your shirt, man. That's an awesome shirt. Where'd you get it? You can tell there's energy behind that. I love that shirt, you know? Or I could say, hey, Ken, yeah, nice shirt. You know, and you have to have, and for that to work, it can't just be the words. You also have to have analytics that identify meaning and tones and tones of voice and frustration and things like that. It has to be able to detect it to feed the AI. But as long as you can give the AI that information, which is there's frustration here, there's sarcasm here, there's condescension here, then it can actually categorize it with the culture, with all those different aspects. And that's where AI makes a difference. AI is very good at recognizing those patterns.
So I'm guessing that AI would get better over time because as more information is fed into it, it's able to make better decisions. Mm-hmm. What do you need to look out for from the standpoint of an enterprise decision maker who's using this perhaps in the early going? I imagine there's going to be a pretty substantial error rate in the beginning while that database of understanding within the AI is beginning to develop.
Yeah, and that's where the challenge is. Some of the engines that we have, we have to tie it to not just the interactions from one customer set. We have to tie it to all the billions of interactions that come through NICE, because we have to use it as a reference point and as an information source for the AI to draw from. Now, again, that's not data that's shared anywhere. It's a repository of information, and think of it as like experiences. It's experiences that the AI can use to recognize patterns. But yes, it gets better over time because the more experiences, the more data it has to recognize patterns. So it learns over time the more information that's there, which is why it's so important to have the right food and the right senses mm-hmm. for it. Because the AI engines that are built, they can't function unless they have some experiences to draw off on or some patterns to recognize. And some corrections to make. They can't operate unless it's all there and the right feedback loops exist, which is why immature products don't work. It doesn't work as well. You can't, it's just not there. It doesn't have the sensory input, so it can't determine anything.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, on day one, when I implement a system like this, it's not a matter of building my own AI. I am leveraging your AI or the vendor's AI that is encompassing all these other customer calls that has picked up those patterns already and is now leveraging that into mine. It's not like I'm starting from scratch here, right?
No. I mean, it's more like the AI system has its ability to recognize patterns, to recognize mm-hmm. errors, to make adjustments, to make decisions based on probabilities, right? It's programmed to do that, but now we have to feed it. So think of a chatbot. If a chatbot is trying to answer specific questions about your own unique company, what kinds of, let's say you're a financial broker, what kind of mutual funds, investment options, accounts you have, that has to be fed. So you have to have a thorough knowledge base that it can use where it can look for answers and it can look for associations. And if that doesn't exist, it won't work. So the AI is one thing. It's the program that allows it to look for those patterns and create those associations. It's kind of the intelligence. Then you have to give it the experiences and the knowledge, which comes from, in our case, a lot of speech analytics and a lot of interactions that occur in actual texts and voices and tendencies. But in the case of like a chatbot, we also need information about your company. How do you solve common problems? What are the answers? We get to feed it with information.
Is all of this part and parcel of another term that you used when we talked last week about natural language processing? Is this the same aspect?
It is. I mean, so there's two things: is speech recognition and natural language processing, which is speech recognition is identifying words that are said or written, and then natural language processing is to see what's written and then look at how it's written and compare it against all the other things that they've seen and where it's led to interpret what it means. That's the natural language processing. What do you mean when you say that?
Yeah. And that's the part that's determining my mood. That's the part that's determining what I need and those sorts of things,
yeah,
right?
Because it's picking up on mm-hmm. tones of voice. It's picking up on rate of speech, okay. How you say things, sarcasm. It's learning how to pick up that information because analytics can feed it with those triggers, right?
The sarcasm thing is really blowing me away, that the AI can pick up the insincerity of sarcasm and be able to compensate for that. That just blows me away.
Yeah. Well, and that it is wild because it's kind of learning how to communicate like we do. And it's the analytics engine that knows how to identify that, that's showing the AI what that is. So when they see it, they can recognize it and incorporate it into patterns, which is crazy.
What are you seeing in terms of accuracy on all this? I mean, I imagine it's, like we said before, it's the kind of thing that gets better over time as more inputs, you know, go into the system. But how are you looking at accuracy? How are you measuring accuracy at this point?
So accuracy is really around a couple of things, which is, you know, are we accurately picking up what is being said? Because if you look at the transcripts of any analytics transcription, it's not perfect. I mean, you know, if you were to read it fast, you get what's going on. But if you were to read it out loud, it'd sound kind of funny. So really what we're feeding, you know, with speech recognition, any engine that exists, and ours is some of the best in the world, they're not perfect. So what you're feeding it is not like what, you know, what you and I understand, but even humans don't always understand each other on what everything is being said, but we're a lot further ahead than AI is, you know, in terms of detecting meaning. Mm-hmm. But it gets better and better all the time, but we're always looking at that accuracy of transcriptions and testing them. And then the AI, here's the thing, the AI kind of adjusts as well. So it learns from feedback. So when they give an answer and someone bypasses them and goes to an agent, it realizes a failure and it looks back and says, okay, my objective was to keep them on the call. It didn't happen. Why? And if it happens multiple times, they can recognize, oh, because the answer I'm giving when they ask it this way is wrong. So it can choose a different answer and it can adjust its probabilities of a match. You know, same with the personalities. You know, the AI will actually connect personalities. And it'll say, hey, you're 77% match or a 90% match or a 60% match. And, you know, it's able to kind of look and adjust and then see how the call went. And if the call was bad and it had bad sentiment, then they realize, okay, that 60% wasn't as good as I thought. You know, now again, it doesn't think like we do exactly, but it is looking for those patterns and it's saying, how do I improve? So it's being fed with feedback to make adjustments. And it makes adjustments. So anyway, I didn't mean to go on the diatribe, but
no, that was okay. That's interesting stuff. One other thing on the predictive behavioral routing, there's two sides of the equation here. Basically, one is understanding the information that's coming from the individual customer and being able to interpret that into those parameters that lead you to the right agent. The other is making sure that you have the complementary talent on the contact center side to meet that need. So that basically changes, you know, how you hire, how you schedule, and your whole staffing requirements. What are you seeing as some of the best practices for bringing all that together into a situation that works?
Yeah, it does change it quite a bit. I mean, it's a whole new element of how to route, how to schedule, and how to plan. And, you know, when you combine that with some of the normal routing rules a call center needs, like I want to route billing calls to this group because they're faster. I want to route, you know, premium customers to this group because they're more experienced. You know, all those types of rules that exist, the behavior kind of adds a whole new element. So when we go into that, there's two parts. One's like HR, which is when you're hiring people, we have to start considering personality types that match. So it's not always just emulating the one agent who's really good. How about emulating the customer base and the personalities they have, right, to kind of match better? That's a different thought. And so we provide the ability for them to test incoming applicants for that the personality types. Second is when it comes to scheduling of people, you know, it doesn't help if you don't have the right combinations of people on the floor. And that's just a hard thing to manually do. It's hard to manually think through every aspect of who you need when and where. So our forecasting and scheduling tools just automate it. We account for all of these different factors, automate the scheduling, and build those scheduling reports and those combinations of agents during different times. And it just helps them to have the right combinations of people, at least the best you can get.
So part of this is about taking the scheduling aspect away from warm breathing people and putting it into the system, mm-hmm. and letting the AI determine how the schedule should be? Is it at that point yes. where it actually builds the schedule and says, Fred, you need to work Tuesday from 2 p.m. until 10 at night?
Yep. Because you have to account for what's our call volume going to be? What has it been in the past? What are we projecting it to be? Who do we need? And at what levels of skill? You have to account for all of that if you want to have the best possible experience. It's just hard to do manually. It just gets to a point where it's right. untenable, you know? So yeah. you know, if you're above 50 agents, you need it. And it's easy. Inside of NICE, it's easy. It's just a part of the product. But you got to consider it all if you want it to work.
Right. So when I do these podcasts, I try to look at the technology from the standpoint of the enterprise decision maker who's out there buying it and, you know, assessing the opportunity. So how would you assess this opportunity in terms of what it means to the actual company? I mean, obviously it's cool stuff. So that's not the question. We already get that part of it. But why do I want to invest here? And what do I need to do in order to move forward and establish the right timetable that makes the most sense for my circumstances?
Yeah. And, you know, when we're consulting with contact centers and you know, in my career, I've met with 1,000+ contact centers, kind of going through the same mm-hmm. thing. And what it always comes down to is it's a bigger picture than like the cost of technology. A lot of times we look at the cost of technology as like a set budget, and it kind of scares people away to say, oh, we can't invest here. You know, we've got this on-prem Avaya from 1984. It's still on. We can't replace it because it could be too expensive on IT. Well, if you explode it into the actual budget, what does it cost to support our customers? 80% of that's going to be your agent labor cost. So that's number one, okay? And we've got to make those agents effective. So if we can get an AI to actually do self-service that can divert 6-7% of all calls, that cuts your labor cost by 6-7%. It's amazing, right? Now, if we take and adjust it and get it up to 8-10 with AI, fantastic. But that's the number we got to focus on, is the big number. When IT costs are 5-7% of the budget, we got to focus on the big number, which is how can we condense, you know, labor cost. Then tying that further, you know, as you kind of look at this whole situation, is then it's about customer experience. How does that impact you? You know, when customers rate you at a 8, 9, or 10 out of 10, they are promoters. They are going to buy more themselves, they're going to refer their friends, and they're not going to leave. And on average, somebody who's a promoter is going to affect your revenue by 4 times what they pay. So if they pay your company $2,000 a year, that's going to be worth $8,000 a year to you in referrals and other things. They sell for you. So we have to fight to get that customer experience high. You know, that's where that's moving. And that's an even bigger number than labor cost, much larger. So first and foremost is, when you're looking at technology, we're impacting labor cost and we're impacting customer experience, because that impacts the financials of the company. That's success or failure. And when you look at just like an IT budget cost, it's, you know, that's a small part. Now, we want to help there too, because most contact centers have 6 to 8 solutions, one for routing, one for scheduling, one for analytics, one for this, one for that. And it's all messy. You know, if you take all those applications and put them into one, that's cheaper too, right? So we want to help on all fronts, but we got to keep the big picture in mind. And we got to make sure that the system can actually execute something that can help you win and help you move those needles. That's what matters.
You know, it's interesting, because business has really changed over the course of the last, you know, 10, 20 years. It used to be a situation where customer service was the thing that everybody went into but wanted to grow out of, because most of it was listening to people complain.
Yeah.
Now we're looking at customer service at a whole new level. It is part of the product itself. It's interwoven with the success of the company at a level that we never appreciated back in in the old days. So it's really interesting to see a system like this coming together. So Rusty Jensen from Nice in Contact, thanks so much for your time today. This has been a really interesting one. Looking at AI and getting a sense of how it's changing business and how it's changing people's interactions with one another is truly a fascinating topic. Would definitely like to have you back on the show again sometime soon, my friend.
Love to. Thank you, Ken.
You've been listening to Avant Technology Insights, featuring information and opinions on how key technologies can be leveraged to solve business problems. Avant Technology Insights is a service of Avant Communications, a platform for IT decision making. All opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guests and the host. For more information, please feel free to download our research reports and other resources at www.goavant.net. That's www.goavant.net. For Avant Research and Analytics, this is Ken Prestige.